Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Outthink Discuss. Today we're going to be talking about how to automate your book marketing. My name is Tim Grawl. I am the owner of Outthink Group, where we work with authors to help them sell a lot of books, build their tribe, and figure out how to do all of their online marketing. Today I have a really great guest. I'm really excited that he agreed to come on. He's a good friend of mine, Josh Kaufman of The Personal MBA. Josh Kaufman wrote the book, The Personal MBA, Master the Art of Business. It's been an international bestseller, translated into 12 languages, and it sold over 65,000 copies. And why he's on today is because he was able to create a system that continues to market his book and continues to sell the book month after month, even though it's been out for over a year and he's not spending a lot of time on it, where lots of authors have to constantly spend time on marketing. So I'm excited to have him. But a couple more things about him. He did start personalmba.com. It gets over 50,000 readers a month. And he has he's had over 1.6 million readers since it was founded in 2005. He's been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, Time, Business Week, Wired, Fast Company, and HarvardBusiness.org. Lots of schools use his book for their curriculum. Schools like Stanford University, New York University, Howard University, Portland State. And before he started Personal MBA, he worked at Procter & Gamble, and he helped do a lot of their marketing campaigns for in-store promotions like at Walmart, Costco, Target, some brands you may have heard of. So Josh, welcome. I'm glad to have you.
Thanks, Tim. Great to be here.
So I want to just start out by letting you tell us a little bit about what the Personal MBA is, why you started it, and how you got it going.
Sure. The Personal MBA is a project that's designed to help business people or non-business people, so you know, designers, programmers, craftsmen, people who have really good skills that can help people but don't know a lot about what businesses are, how they work. And a lot of people, particularly creative people, understand that in order to do well, you have to really understand how businesses work. But most of the resources that are out there are too confusing or don't really start at square zero. So the Personal MBA as a project started as a way for me to teach myself about all of these things, and evolved into Personal MBA as a book. Is really putting together all of the things that business people need to know about how businesses work, and put it all in one book, instead of having to search hundreds or thousands of books to figure out what's important.
Well, and so as we get started, we're going to dive in real quick because we only have an hour, and I want to make sure we get to everything. We're going to dive into your book and what you did to market it, but I want to give a couple things to you that are listening. As we go through, we're going to talk about some various resources and tools that that Josh has used, and I'm going to put those up on the screen and type them up as he says them. And also later, when I send you the recording of this, I'll put a link to where you'll be able to see all of the different resources. Also, right there, if you've logged in through the GoToWebinar panel, there's a place to put in questions. So if you have any questions as we go along, put them in there, and towards the end, we'll get to as many of them as possible. So with that said, let's get started. First, I want to ask, you know, the Personal MBA, it was a book based on the website. You know, what was that transition? What was that transition between this website that had a great following and then a book? What made you decide to do a book? And, you know, what made you decide to go with traditionally publishing it?
Sure. The Personal MBA as a website really started as a repository for my research. So I was going through this process of reading and researching and trying to learn as much about business as I could. And personalmba.com started as a way for me to share all of the really great resources that I was finding. So there are a lot of business books out there, both good and bad. And since we all have limited time, if you want to learn about business, it's far better to focus on the small number of books that really give you the most bang for your reading time. So personalmba.com grew up around the Personal MBA reading list. which is a list of 99 of the best business books available for people who want to teach themselves how businesses work. And this started as a very small kind of side project back in, this would have been 2004, 2005. And a lot of my work on personalmba.com is specifically going out and trying to find new books and resources that are really good. And I spend a lot of time and attention every year making sure this list of 99 books is the best list of business books that exists.
And so when you turned it into a book, you didn't just, you know, obviously your book's not just a list of all the books, but right. What is the book? Tell me about the format so that we can really dive into how that turned into the marketing as well.
Yeah. So based on this list of books, what I was finding is a couple of things. Number one, in doing this research, I found the same ideas were coming up over and over and over again. And that's a really good indication that those particular ideas are really important. The problem is those ideas were spread out across hundreds of books. So I was recommending to readers that they should go read these books, but most people would start off really excited and read a couple, but it took a lot of time. And so how the project turned into a book was, I thought it would be a really good idea to take all of these very most important concepts. They're not very complicated. They don't take a long time to explain, but there wasn't a resource that talked about all of them in one place. And so Personal MBA, the book, became a collection of the 226 most important ideas that all business practitioners need to know, regardless of what industry or market they're in. And so, yeah, the idea behind the book is read this one comprehensive introductory primer before you do anything else, and that will give you the ideas that you need to succeed in your business no matter what you do.
Okay, so when you started writing this book and you got the deal with Portfolio, you know, a lot of authors go through this time where it's like, okay, I got my book deal, now I write the book, then I do all of the editing and everything, and then maybe about 3 months before the book comes out, they think, huh, I should probably do something to promote my book. But you did something different. From the very beginning, even before you started writing the book, you were thinking, okay, how am I going to market this thing? So tell us a little bit about your original marketing plans for the book.
Yeah, so the original marketing plans for the book really focused around two primary factors. The first was the website itself. So in particular, the list of the 99 best business books available is a huge, huge factor in the traffic that comes to personalmba.com. Most of the people who find Personal MBA either find it through a recommendation to a friend, who usually directs them to the reading list first, or from people searching for terms like best business books or MBA book or terms like that. And so really the website is there to attract people who are interested in this particular topic and to give them an interesting alternate way to look at this, the challenge of educating yourself about business. The second main factor, which I had been doing well before the book deal, was collecting the names and email addresses of readers. Because I was updating this list over a period of time, it made a great deal of sense to collect contact information so I could let people know when new books were available. And so the major part of the initial marketing plan and a major reason why Portfolio was interested in the book is because I already had an audience of people who had raised their hands and said, yes, I want more information on this topic. And using that made it much easier to promote the book when it was out.
So something like your reading list, you've called that flagship resources, right?
Yes. Flagship resources are evergreen content.
Okay, so talk a little bit about that. So I've even tried to do this for myself. It's like, okay, you know, Josh has got his 99 books. You know, what could I do? You know, what kind of thought processes should people go through when they're thinking about this evergreen content or this flagship content that's going to keep people coming in the door day after day, month after month?
Yeah. There's the general idea behind flagship content or flagship resources, evergreen content, It's something that people in your target market or the people that you want to talk to, it's something that they're going to find interesting and useful and very important. It is not time sensitive. It's not time bound. So it's not, so everything, if you go to the blog part of the website, that's where I publish on Personal MBA all of, you know, the updates, the new cool things that are happening. So for example, the Personal MBA edition published in Simplified Chinese just came out. So I put a blog post letting everybody know that was available. That's all time-sensitive material, which is really good when you already have an audience to update them, but it's not really good at attracting a larger audience over time. So, for example, it's not very likely that post on the Chinese edition of the book coming out is going to keep bringing new readers to Personal MBA over a long period of time. You want to have some type of evergreen resource or evergreen content that is going to be valuable to people regardless of whenever they find it. And ideally, it's a resource that people find useful enough to keep coming back to over and over and over again and recommending to people over and over and over again. So when you combine having some type of evergreen resource with collecting names and email addresses so you can contact people later, that's how you grow a very significant audience, and that's how you can successfully sell a book over a longer period of time.
Well, so you keep talking about collecting names and emails. So, you know, what would you say makes that better or more important or different from, you know, there's all these new tools. We have all the social media like Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, there's other authors that are just building a readership around their blog and, you know, want people to come back and read the blog. So, you know, why did you decide to go the route of an email list instead of these other tools that are available?
Yeah, two primary reasons. The first is attention, particularly the quality of attention. So even though people are getting more and more email over a period of time, people tend to spend more time and attention to something that they get via an email versus something that they see up on Twitter. So I use Twitter, I use Facebook, and I can say that both of those social media tools are a very small fraction of the amount of response that I get from my email list. So people just respond to email better still. The other is control. So when you have an email address, when you have a database of interested customers that you can contact whenever you want to, there's a great deal of security in that. So, for example, with something like Twitter, when you build a list on Twitter, you are building a list for Twitter. You don't own that. You can't export it. You can't do anything else with it. Whereas when you build an email list, you can use that as the linchpin of a very comprehensive, systematic way to market your book over a longer period of time. So tools like AWeber, Campaign Monitor, MailChimp, allow you to build the email part of your business into a system. So, for example, in all of those platforms, you can create a list of messages that people will receive over a certain period of time, and you only have to program it once, which is fantastic. So for example, personalmba.com right now has 32,000 readers, and there is no way that I could contact or deliver information to every single one of those people individually. There's no way I could do it. But by automating the email process and sending a sequence of follow-up messages over a longer period of time through one of these email platforms, it becomes much, much easier to serve a larger number of readers.
Okay. So website, collecting names and emails, that's kind of basic building your following on your website. So I want to get back to the book. So, you know, when you got your book deal and you started writing the book, you had your website, you had already been collecting names and email addresses. So what became your plan to use those resources to actually sell this one thing, this book that was going to come out once it was done?
Sure. So a couple of things. If you go to the Best Business Books page, the reading list. If you look at this page, it doesn't really look like there's anything overtly promotional on there. It looks like a content page. There's a lot of really valuable stuff on there. But if you look at it, there's a link up in the header that says book. That leads directly to being able to buy that book on Amazon. Up in the upper right-hand sidebar, there's another call-out for the book. That leads to buying the book on Amazon. On the reading list, I say, start here. If you're new to this reading list, you should probably read the Personal MBA book first. In addition, there are three ways to sign up for the mailing list, all within the top 1/20th of this resource page. So this book, even though it looks pretty straightforward, looks like a resource page, it's very highly optimized to do one of two primary things: either get people to buy the book first, or get people to sign up for the newsletter first. When you sign up for the newsletter and you confirm your email address, the very first thing that you see is a page of information about the book. So in combining these two very basic tools, the website and the email newsletter, what I've been able to do is test and optimize this to the point approximately 5% of visitors to personalmba.com will purchase the book either immediately or within the first week of visiting. And that, you know, that's a really, really high number when you're talking about a purchase conversion.
And that's still...
Still. Yeah, because it's this is a system. It runs without conscious input on my part. So what's really nice is the more people who visit personalmba.com, the system is designed to translate that directly into book sales without any effort on my part.
Okay, so if we look at it from start to finish, you have evergreen content, which brings in visitors on an ongoing and kind of consistent basis.
Yep.
You use that evergreen content to convert people to buy the book, and if not buy the book, sign up for the email list, which then the next step after the email list is to buy the book.
Buy the book. And if they don't buy the book, they get a sequence of email messages that have an upsell to the book.
So... how long? So that system, once it's created, you don't spend any time on it.
Zero time. It just works. And I think in thinking of putting together the website and the marketing strategy for the book launch, I spent most of my time thinking about how to build that system. And then once that system was in place, then I went out to get guest posts and do interviews and do a lot of the things to bring people to personalmba.com. Because I knew once people hit personalmba.com, that would translate into book sales and that would translate into newsletter subscribers.
Right. And so what I see a lot of is authors either going out and doing a lot of their own promotion or hiring a publicist to do a lot of promotion, but they're driving all of this traffic and all of this effort towards basically they keep pouring water in a bucket with holes in the bottom.
Exactly.
And so if we're talking to people that, you know, have their website but, you know, don't really know what to do with it, what would you say are the top, you know, three or four things that need to be on the homepage, need to be easily accessed? You know, what should, if people do nothing else to their website, what should be on their website? What should they be doing with their website?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. Number one, if you don't have some type of evergreen resource or content, start developing that now. That is going to be what brings people to your site over and over and over again. Second, make it really, really easy to find a purchase link to the book. I've seen a lot of sites by most authors who will mention that a book is available for sale in some isolated corner of the site once, and that's it. It needs to be really obvious and easy to get to. So shooting for at least three, sometimes up to five or six, different ways that people can find their way to purchasing your book, all of those things make a really big difference when it comes to converting visitors to your website into a purchase. And the third is a newsletter subscription. If you're not collecting the names and email addresses of people who are visiting your website, you're not building, I'm not a big fan of the publishing term, but you're not building your platform. You're not building your audience that you are going to be able to go to when you have new news, when you have a new book. And the larger your audience is, the more subscribers you have, the more active subscribers you have, the easier it will be for you as an author to take that to a publisher and say, you should publish my next book because I have this engaged, very significant list of people who have already raised their hands saying, I'm interested in this, and who will be ready to buy it as soon as you're ready to publish it.
Okay, so go ahead.
And I think to your point where a lot of authors are focused on things like press and things like publicity, you really need to focus on building this system first. When you build the system first, all of those things just bring more visitors to your site and add to the system. It's very, very easy to get some press, at least some press, when your book is new. Because it's new, there's some news there. A really constructive question to ask yourself as an author is, what am I going to do when the free, easy press dries up? When your book is out, 6 to 12 months after your book is published, it's no longer new, and that's not going to be a big source of publicity for you. So what are you going to do to keep promoting this book over a longer period of time? And building the system is the way that you do that.
Well, and if you think about this, a lot of times, authors come out with a book, they do that kind of big first push, maybe they travel and speak on it and sell the book, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But they kind of, when they come out with their next book, it's like this back office title now kind of dries up and everything's focused on this next one.
Yep.
But what you're creating is, because you're working on your second book, and what you're creating is a system where even when your second book's out, your first book is going to keep selling at a steady rate, and then the next book you'll create a system that's similar. And so what happens is by the time you've written 3, 4, or 5 books, if that's what you end up doing, but yep, by the time you've done that, you now have titles that are all making you money, not just the newest one.
And they all multiply each other.
Right.
So for example, the next book that I'm working on is not strictly business. This is a learning and a skill acquisition book. It is a book that is going to be very, very interesting to my current audience on Personal MBA, but it's also going to be something that appeals to a very different type of reader than I currently have. And so, once I have both systems rolling, they will reinforce each other, so you get this very nice multiplier effect. But without creating the system in the first place, I think Personal MBA has been out in hardcover for a year and a half now, and is still, I checked Amazon this morning, the sales rank was 1600, and it was the number one business book, or number one book in business training, still. And that's without any active promotion on my part. It's just the system doing its thing.
Well, that was my next question. So is there, what if anything are you doing to promote the book over the last, say, 3 or 4 months?
In terms of Personal MBA or the new one?
The Personal MBA.
Personal MBA. Most of my promotion has been in the form of guest posts on blogs and interviews, mostly interviews at this point.
And so I want to stop there and hone in on this. So, let's talk about some traditional things that authors do to promote their books. So we do things like book tours, travel around and speak a lot. That's where a lot of business book authors make their money, is they travel and do speaking engagements. You can do consulting. Now, when we get into the fiction world, there's not really a whole lot that past the book tours,
sure,
and maybe speaking here and there. But you did it. I think you. How many times did you travel to speak?
Once. And I did two speaking engagements. I did one at IBM and I did one at Google.
Yeah, when Google calls, you just go.
Right, and actually, if you go to personalmba.com, on the front page, you can actually see that talk. It's freely available. But yeah, that was the only speaking that I did for the book.
So why didn't you do the traditional forms of traveling and speaking and book tours and that kind of thing? Why wasn't that a part of your marketing plan?
Two big reasons. The biggest was my daughter Leela was born 10 days before Personal MBA was published. So I had an infant at home, and I was about 10 days into the severe sleep deprivation when the book actually hit the shelf. So part of it was necessity. We knew about 7 months before publication that travel was not an option. So, you know, aside from some, I think I went to California and spoke at Google and IBM, and then I did some limited travel. I went to South by Southwest that year. But in terms of my ability to travel, that was really pushing it. So part of it was necessity. The other is learning from a lot of my friends and colleagues who have published books in the very recent past. The effectiveness of all of those channels, so the book tours, the speaking engagements, all of those things, the opportunities are both drying up, and they're not as effective as they used to be. So, for example, I remember hearing a story about a year before Personal MBA came out. Al Gore came out with another book and was going around on a book tour, and he would be lucky to get 50 people. And we're talking about somebody with the public profile of Al Gore. Traveling around and not doing some of the more systematic promotional things, just traveling around and seeing people in person is becoming less effective than it traditionally has been. So both out of necessity and realizing that these promotional channels are becoming more expensive and less effective over time, I decided to just keep building the system and doing my thing.
And so what did your publisher think of that? Were they worried about the fact that you weren't traveling around and speaking on it? Because it was interesting, right before we did this today, I was speaking with an author, and her publisher is giving her a really hard time about the fact that she's not planning on doing all these speaking engagements. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about this really, like, new idea about creating an online system and bringing people in and creating this kind of online-only platform. Mm-hmm. You know, have you had any trouble with your publisher or any pushback from your publisher that, like, you're doing this and not all of these other things that they traditionally want their authors doing?
Actually, surprisingly little. I mean, they're seeing the same information from more authors than just me, that authors who have been trying it have not been finding very much success when it comes to actually moving copies. And so a lot of publishers now, including my publisher, it's very, very rare that they will underwrite a book tour for you. They will not pay for it. If you want to go off and do it on your own as kind of a fun life experience to have, then they will be thrilled if you're willing to invest the time and money to do that. But they're not willing to invest their budget there because they're seeing the numbers and they know that it's not moving books.
Okay, so you know, so we've talked about the online system, but you also did something really cool with what I call baking the marketing into the book.
Yep.
Again, you know, most authors start thinking about the marketing after the book's done and to print. You were doing that ahead of time. So tell me about what you did with your book to make sure the book became a marketing device for your platform.
Yeah. So Personal MBA, as I mentioned earlier, is made up of about 226 very short sections, so a couple of pages a piece. And it introduces a lot of vocabulary and a lot of terms that people may not be immediately familiar with. Or, you know, if somebody's reading the book and they find this great new idea, but the people that they work with aren't familiar with it, that really diminishes the effectiveness of the book in many ways. So one of the things that I wanted to do very early in the process was make it easy for a reader to share one or more of the ideas that they were reading in the book that they were finding very valuable. So every single section in the book has a share this link that goes to book.personalmba.com. And when a visitor goes to the URL that's associated with every idea in the book, they get a quick summary of what that idea is, why it's important, and how to apply it. And It does a couple of things. Number one, it's a really great added value for the reader, because not only can they read about all of this useful information and apply it, but if they want to reference it in an email or in a blog post or send it to somebody saying, hey, I read this and thought of you, it may be useful in your business. The design of the book makes it really, really easy for people to share it. And then once a new visitor is on book.personalmba.com, a lot of the book sale optimizations that are present on personalmba.com have been translated over to the book site as well. So it's both a way of being more valuable to the reader, and then as a byproduct, making it easy for readers to share with new readers that may find it useful. And that translates into book sales.
And that's, I think this is a really interesting idea that a lot of authors could take advantage of. So when you're talking about putting stuff in the book that drives people back to the platform, you did this great thing where at the end of each section you had a link, but what are some other, I'm sure you've thought of other ideas, you're already thinking of them for your new book. Like, what do you think are some other ideas that authors could do to actually use their book as a way to drive people back to their platform?
Yeah, I think, and this is probably a little different between nonfiction and fiction authors. For nonfiction authors, having additional resources on your website is an absolute no-brainer. If there's additional value that the reader can gain by visiting your website and maybe giving you their name and email address, then that is an absolutely great thing to do. I think it's one of the things that you want to think about is if you are trade publishing a book, you're going to have a larger percentage of your readers who may find you in a bookstore, have never seen anything that you've done online, aren't familiar with your resources or your approach, and that's a really great thing. So what you want to do is make it enticing for that reader who hasn't seen any of your work online to go from the book to your website and ideally subscribe to your newsletter so you can absolute no-brainer. Put some resources in the book that are on your website only to get someone from the book to the website. For fiction authors, I think it's a little bit different. You can still offer additional value in the form of resources, but those resources look like different. Maybe it's fan art. Maybe it's additional trailers or stories or vignettes or explorations of another character. So just start to think about what are some additional things that you can do for your reader that they're going to find valuable that you can have on your website and not in the book. And just make it really easy for a reader to go from one to the other.
Well, and I like to think about here, if you think about how you interact with books as you read them, a lot of times you read them, you'll go to the website and want to learn more about it. Or if you start looking at fiction, how many ancillary things have been built up around the Lord of the Rings book that people
exactly.
can have created on their own or people have created for the that's really expanded what people can do as part of the world of the book. And so if you start thinking through those, then create a system that actually brings those through. So many of these things look like they were done organically, but really it was smart people behind the scenes creating a system to make sure people were coming into not just a book, but an actual world that they can take part in.
Right. And it's amazing that a lot of I know this happens in the writing process on both the fiction and the nonfiction side. Sometimes you create resources that for whatever reason didn't make it into the book. Maybe it's a deleted scene. Maybe it's actually for Personal MBA, in the original manuscript, I had a list of two or three application questions for every single concept. And the manuscript was getting too long for production, and so we decided to take them out. Well, those questions are still really valuable, and now they live on the website. So it's an additional bonus that readers get if they go from the book to the website. It was originally intended to be in the book. Now it's a free bonus if you go between the two. So
yeah,
we really look at kind of the outside stuff or the stuff that doesn't make the cut in the book can still be valuable as a resource on your site.
Yeah, I like to think of these as like the DVD extras, right? You know,
yeah, exactly.
On the DVD, if you go and look, it's, you know, it's like they got deleted scenes and interviews with like the actors and directors, but really it was stuff that was already easy. It was either already created or it's like, well, we have a camera and this actor here, let's just talk to him.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy.
But I think it works in this, and it, to me, it's even beyond what you created for the book. So like if you did interviews where maybe a paragraph of the interview actually made it into the book, you still mm-hmm. have all of this stuff for the interview. Or if you're a fiction writer and you're doing like something in the medical world, you had to talk to a nurse or talk to a doctor to understand the backstory and what actually goes on. Well, there's more great content. So yeah, I think that what you've done is all of this stuff you already had, you just made it available.
Right.
So it wasn't like this huge body of work you then had to create after the book was done.
Right. Yeah, it was a combination of both, because I was thinking about the book site in conjunction with writing the book. So that was part of the plan all along.
How important is that? Do you think, like, are you doing that now with your second book? So as you're writing it, you know, are you already thinking ahead about how this is all going to integrate together?
Yes, I'm spending most of the time that I'm thinking about marketing for the new book is focused on how can I build a system that will keep this book selling for a long, long time without conscious inputs of effort on my part. Because that's the only way that my publishing can scale.
So now that you've done one and you're working on the second, what are things that you've learned that you won't do again, things that you look back and you're like, well, I could have done it this way. I'm going to use this in this new book.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've learned, I've experimented with so many different things on personalmba.com over the years. It's nuts. One of the things that I've learned that I'm seeing a lot of new authors use are things like communities and forums and, you know, some of the more like interactive social parts of things. Depending on the work, those can either be really good things, letting your fans talk to each other, or they can be absolute time sucks in every way possible. So fighting spam, dealing with moderation, having you focus daily on doing things that aren't doing more research, writing new books. The things that your readers really want you to spend more time doing. So for example, I learned the hard way over a number of years that putting a community forum on Personal MBA was not the highest and best use of time for anyone. And it took me a while to realize that. I'm not going to repeat that mistake on the skill acquisition book. But there are things that I can do. So instead of investing my time in, you know, building a social network on Ning, for example, I'm going to invest that time developing more tools and resources that the reader can actually benefit from immediately. And that's ultimately going to be a better use of time, both to benefit the reader and to help sell more books over a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. So everybody wins.
So one thing it sounds like you're focusing on is wanting to make sure that you do a couple things really, really well and kind of cut out anything else. You know, and this could be 80-20, or I think in most cases it's more like 95-5. You know, find those 5% of all the options you have to market your book and cut out the rest. And so when you are thinking through, so you were just talking about a forum or an online community and how that's not the best use of your time. What is the decision process you go through in actually figuring out, okay, this is worth my time for marketing my book, this is not worth my time for marketing my book?
Yeah. So the question I mentioned earlier, what are you going to do when the easy publicity dries up? That's a big thing on my mind always. Because the free publicity early on is an amplifier. It's not the whole game. So what I really think about is how can I make this a system that I can create once and let it run with minimal intervention. The second, and this is something that I've tried to apply to Personal MBA overall, is am I developing a resource? So if I'm spending time doing something, is this something that I can develop once and it will be useful to my readers 20 years from now without me doing much to change it? I may choose to improve it if that seems like a good use of time, but ideally, when I publish something on personalmba.com, it is done forevermore. So the book does not have to be rewritten. The reading list, if I never make another change to it, will be as useful 20 years from now as it is today. That question or that criteria saves me a ton of time. Because, you know, it's when you have a new project particularly, it's really easy to get excited about a whole bunch of different ideas or possibilities. But every idea or possibility that you commit to requires potentially a ton of work on your part. So if you're going to invest the time and energy anyway, you might as well invest it on the things that are going to be useful 20 years from now versus the things that will be useful during the week of your book launch and then will be cast by the wayside. And then I really spend a lot of time thinking about, okay, for the three or four things that I'm really going to commit to or really, really optimize for this book or for this project, what are those elements? How do they fit together? And how does one element naturally lead into another part? So for example, how does the website lead to the newsletter, which leads back to the website, which leads to the book? I spend a lot of time thinking about how does that flow go? And how can I do things to make it easier or more efficient for a reader to go in a particular direction? So how can I make it easy for a reader to check out the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or IndieBound? How can I make it easy for a reader who liked the book to leave a review? How can I make it easy for when I announce a new book project, how can I make it easy for a person to raise their hand in advance and say, yes, I'm interested in information, let me know when it's available? Really thinking about the process as a whole and removing as much friction for the reader as humanly possible, that's what I spend most of my time thinking about right now.
Well, and you mentioned a little bit ago, you said you've experimented with so many things on Personal MBA. So two questions there. What kinds of things have you experimented with? And again, where do you find the ideas of what you want to experiment with? And then experimenting, that means data, right? So that means you're making decisions not on anecdotal evidence or how you feel that morning or what you read somewhere online. You know, you're actually making decisions based on data. So what kind of data do you look at and what tools do you use to collect that data?
Yeah, there are a couple things. The first is the experimentation actually goes way beyond the book part. So the book is, you know, yes, I get paid to write books, but I really try to think of my trade published books as a mass form of distributed marketing that I get paid to do, which is awesome. But ideally, in terms of business sustainability, that turns into something else. So in my case, that is either readers signing up for an online course, signing up for a live course that I hold here in Fort Collins, Colorado every couple months, signing up for some type of premium program or consulting or coaching, or it could be a number of things. But a lot of the experimentation that I do revolves around one of two things. A, what is my audience interested in hearing more about? So more on the research side. And the other thing is, okay, I have an idea for another thing that I can do to help my readers in some fashion. Can I experiment to see if this is a viable idea or not? And if it's not, can I kill it quickly? So on the research side, there are a couple of things. Number one, wufoo.com is an amazing, amazing resource for authors who want to do customer research. So for example, in the second email that people receive when they sign up for the Personal MBA email update, in the second email, they get a link that goes to a survey. That survey has about 12 questions on it. And those questions give me a really, really detailed picture of what my readers are interested in learning more about. And so the more data that I collect on that side, the better I can think about new projects and try to estimate, is this going to be something that my readers are interested in? You can also, alongside that process, the email platforms like AWeber and MailChimp have analytics built into the package. So when you send out an email, you can see how many people did I send it to, how many people opened it, how many clicked it, and you can compare things that you have sent over a period of time to see what your audience responded most strongly to. That's valuable data. The third tool that I use, there are two analytics tools that I use on Personal MBA to track information over time. One is Google Analytics, which is free. It's amazing for looking at longer range sorts of data. So I've had Google Analytics installed on my website since 2005, and I can look back over the years of personalmba.com and see how people's interests have been evolving based on different things that I've been doing. Super valuable. The other thing that I've been paying a closer attention to now is actually real-time data. So there is a wonderful live analytics package called Gauges. That's GAUG.ES. A little script that you install on your website that allows you to see visitors roll in real time. So for example, I'm looking at it right now. I just published a new post, the Chinese edition. I can see that in the first hour that I sent this, 13,070 visitors have come to it, mostly from the email that I just sent via AWeber.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah, there you go. So, and it's interesting because it allows you to see at a quick glance on a day-by-day basis, where's your traffic coming from? Is a site writing about you? So every once in a while, I'll have a little alert saying a post went up on Reddit or Hacker News or Lifehacker or whatever that's sending a lot of traffic today. If you know that, you can do things to optimize your site for those readers. So for example, if I have a post that goes up and it's featured on Lifehacker, I can go back in and edit that post saying, welcome Lifehacker readers, if you're new to the site, check out these things. And one of those will probably be signing up for the email newsletter. So there are lots of things that you can do to optimize your site for newsletter subscriptions or sales based on real-time data. Gauges is fantastic for that.
So I don't think we hit on, though. I was curious of what you said. You try to find out what your audience is interested in, and then is that what you kind of turn into what you start experimenting with?
Yes, that's exactly it. So if something... If I get some survey data that says my readers are interested in how to actually go from no business to their own, you know, fully formed legal entity, LLC, all that stuff. If that's something that my survey data says, then I can spend some additional time and energy figuring out the best way to give that that information to my audience. But if I don't know that, then I may go off and do something different that's not as valuable.
Yeah, and you know, I think Derek Halpern of Social Triggers, and if you ever sign up for my newsletter, the first email you'll get is kind of this open question of what are you struggling with? So from a business standpoint, I want to know what people are struggling with so that I can help them solve that problem. But what are some other questions? And I know, I mean, we're talking broad because it could be any book, you know, fiction, nonfiction, whatever. But what are some questions that you would recommend both for nonfiction and fiction writers that that you think would give them a sense of what they would want to know from their readers?
Yeah, so if you go to personalmba.com/survey, you can see exactly what I ask my readers. And a lot of it is, so some of the early questions are just collecting some very basic information. And for my audience, it's important for me to understand very broadly, are my readers, do they have jobs? Are they self-employed or do they own their own business? Do they want to be? So trying to get a handle on where in terms of business interests, where are my readers right now? Likewise with things like income and what are you primarily interested in? The idea behind these questions early on, they're segmentation questions. So it allows me to compare what my readers who don't have jobs and are just entering the workforce are interested in versus people who own their own company and are making a lot of money and want to take that next step. What does that look like for them? And it's hard to figure out what that really looks like unless you have some information on who your readers are. So I ask a couple of segmentation questions up front. And then I ask the questions that we just talked about. What are you currently struggling with? What is your number one goal right now? Those open-ended questions are very, very valuable when it comes to really understanding what your readers want and being able to talk about what your readers want in the exact words that they use to talk about it. So leaving those questions open-ended is super important because it helps you figure out how and what your readers are thinking about at the point in time where they're looking at you. After these types of questions, I tend to treat the other questions as more experimental. So I have a bunch of ideas on things that I think might work. Are you interested in this or not? That data allows me to test a whole bunch of new ideas very quickly, and then I can take the ideas that have the most interest and look into developing that into a fuller something, whether that's a blog post or a product or a book or whatever.
Well, and you mentioned one idea. You said it kind of in passing a few minutes ago, and you were talking about, you said that can't scale. And I think that's really interesting because when it comes to authors and writing books, you can't scale that. There's only so many words you can produce in a day. And so when it comes to the marketing side of things, marketing can't be a full-time job. It has to be a part-time or less part because you have to actually be writing stuff, so you have something to sell. So, in thinking through this, to me it's so important that that you figure out these kind of systems. Otherwise, you won't have time to write.
Yeah, and that's, I think, particularly acute in my case because I'm running a publishing business and I'm writing books and I'm trying to market them. And I don't have an assistant. I don't have employees. It's just me. And that is by design. I really like operating as kind of a one-man army kind of structure and just the way that I'm built. So that is a limitation in a lot of ways, but that's incredibly clarifying in a lot of ways too. Because, so for example, my audience in terms of subscribed readers now is about four times what it was when I signed the contract for PersonalMBA.com or for the Personal MBA book. And it's been an interesting experience handling the increase in readership and the increase in emails and the increase in questions and, all of those things. And without building a system, I would go insane. Absolutely insane. And it's super important because I love doing this work and I intend to do it for a long time. But I have to have a plan. If my audience is ever going to be 5 or 10 or 100 times bigger than it is right now, I have to have a system to handle that or I am going to go insane. So it's partially necessity. And having that self-imposed restriction of I'm doing this by myself, I have to plan for this in advance, I found that it helps me make much better decisions on what to commit to and what not to commit to. So it'll be nice when my next book comes out, Personal MBA will still be selling, it will still be selling well, and I can focus on building a new system that just reinforces that success and builds on it.
I know we're kind of focusing on the automated marketing side of things, but I do want to touch on something because I know a lot of people listening right now are dealing with the I don't have time to write, or you know, I got this idea for a book, but I can't get it out of my head. So, give us a glimpse in the day of Josh Kaufman. I mean, you're trying to run your site, you're writing a new book, you're writing content for your site, you're writing content for blog posts. You know, you're doing interviews, you're doing stuff like this, and then you know, you've got a daughter and a wife that you like to spend time with from time to time, and so. Give us a snapshot of the day in Josh Kaufman. How do you actually get all of this stuff done?
Yeah, very carefully. there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of it is I have three major priorities when it comes down to it. I have researching, so getting the raw input of whatever it is that I'm looking at right now. So researching for my new book, researching for a product, going out into the world and collecting information and distilling that down into something useful is really the core of what I do, regardless of the format. I'm the guy who looks out into the big broad world and condenses that down into something that normal people can find useful. As a side note, that's one of the reasons that I don't travel much and choose not to travel much, because when I'm on the road, I can't really research well. So a large part of my day is spending time reading books and websites and going through training programs and really looking out into the world for what's available. The second is creating, and what that looks like depends on what I'm creating. So for a book, I try to, depending on what phase of the book I'm in, I'm either condensing and notating and adding a bunch of stuff to the book file for later use, or I'm taking a look at all the stuff that's already in my book file and I'm trying to translate that into to words that would actually be in a finished book. So that's kind of a two-phase process. That's not the only creation that I do. Sometimes I create videos. Sometimes I record audiobooks. Sometimes I write blog posts. So the actual, what the creation looks like in any given day changes, but the research and the creation part are always present in some form. And then the third is the marketing. So going through and making sure, you know, I've done all of this work to go out into the world, find useful things, and put it in a format people can use. That doesn't help anybody unless people know that it exists. So I spend a lot of time thinking about where are people who are interested in this type of material, how can I find them, and how can I make sure that they know that this resource exists to help them. And sometimes that looks like guest posts on blogs. Sometimes that's an interview. Sometimes it's a conversation with a journalist. It looks like all sorts of different things. But the marketing has to happen in order for people to find it so they can actually make use of these things and get a benefit from it. Those are the three big ones. Those are the three things that I plan my day around. The last, and this is kind of the ever-present part of running any sort of business, whether it's publishing or being an author or whatever, is the administration part. So doing things like finances, doing things like taxes, doing things like responding to support requests in my course, things like that. The working on the system part of things is if there's some administration thing that I'm doing over and over and over and over again, that's a really good opportunity to make it easier. So I spend a lot of time thinking about how the system is working and making sometimes very small improvements to the system to keep myself from spending a lot of time doing the same repetitive things. So yeah, changes on a daily basis, but that overall structure is pretty representative.
Well, okay, I have one more thing I know you and I wanted to talk about, but I want to say one more time, if you have some questions, we're going to try to take a couple before we run out of time. So right there in the GoToWebinar screen, if you have any questions, put them in there, and I'll try to find a couple that I think are a good fit, and we'll go over those next. But one thing I know is important when it comes to Amazon, which sells, you know, a vast majority of books online. So when we're talking about online marketing systems, that's the big push there. And one of the biggest drivers of sales on Amazon is book reviews, of the customer reviews.
Yes.
And so you have created kind of this system to make sure that they've grown over time. And I think you're up to, what, 130 reviews of your book now?
Yeah, 131 as of this morning.
Okay. And so, you know, what have you done to make sure those are steadily coming in and that's steadily growing?
You know, it's funny. It is as far as systems go, just brain dead simple. When somebody sends me a note, and that note could be through email, could be through Twitter, could be a nice blog post, whatever it is, when somebody says something nice, I ask them nicely to leave a review on Amazon. That's pretty much it. And the systems part of things is just making sure that I do that consistently. So there are a couple of tools, one which is an absolute lifesaver on the software side called Text Expander. There are a lot of other programs that do roughly the same thing. It's basically typing a short abbreviation that expands into a sentence or a paragraph or something that you've already defined. So when somebody sends me an email saying, I love the book, found it really useful, we're using it in XYZ, thanks. When I reply to them, I reply to them first, and then I have a little Text Expander abbreviation that expands into, by the way, if you consider it, please leave a review on Amazon. The reviews really help people, help new readers pick which book to read next. Thanks. And that's it. And I send roughly the same message on Twitter. There's a wonderful little tool called TwitHawk. TwitHawk.com that combines kind of like a Google alert type of search. So, you know, I have an alert set for personal MBA. And when somebody says, you know, on Twitter, I've been reading the personal MBA, found it super useful, I just reply to them, say, thanks. By the way, if you wouldn't mind leaving a review on Amazon, that would be awesome. Super helpful, thanks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the system itself is not complicated. What I've been doing is I've been doing that for a year and a half, and it doesn't take too much time, but it's amazing. When people find your work and they really like it, they want to be helpful. They really do. Mm-hmm. And if they feel that a good way to give back to you for creating something useful is leaving a review, most people are very happy to do that. So there's no secret voodoo to it. It's basically just asking nicely and asking consistently.
Hmm. Okay, so I want to jump in. We've got some really, really great questions here. So I want to start with a question from Laura. Do you have other examples of evergreen, good for 20 years content besides an MBA reading list? What else do you offer? What will your next book offer? And I would add, what else have you seen out there, like in different, you know, different niches or different industries?
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them that are out there, and it largely depends on the industry. Probably the best example that you can go see right now, there's a wonderful website called CopyBlogger that specializes in content marketing and information marketing creation type stuff for bloggers, authors, etc. A while back, they ran a series called Magnetic Headlines.
So, oh, yes.
So basically, if you're a blogger, if you're a journalist, whatever, the data is very clear that the headline that you put on whatever that you're creating plays a massive role in how widely it's read and how broadly it's spread. So CopyBlogger put together this resource called Magnetic Headlines that breaks down, I think it was, I don't know, 20 or 30 very common headline formats that have been tested that perform really well. And they talk about the headline, they explain why it works, and they give you examples of exactly how you would do it for all sorts of different types of offers or products or resources. I have referred to that, and I've sent readers to that hundreds of times because it's an amazing resource. If you're new to copywriting in any way, shape, or form, it's one of the best articles that you can read as a beginner, period. And it's free. So by publishing that on CopyBlogger, and I know that they have received probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of visits to that resource specifically, just because it's awesome. So, and that leads into their email newsletter, which leads into all of the products and the services and the resources that they offer.
Are there any others that come to mind?
I'm trying to think. I can think of actually one in a more of a business type industry. There is a large insurance company, MetLife, who has branched out into financial services, and they have created a training program that they call RetireWise, which tries to help people who are new to the whole, you know, financial planning, retirement planning, whatever, help them understand what goes on or what's involved. The interesting thing is it is not a veiled sales pitch. So it's not a, you know, let's get a whole bunch of people into the room and pitch people on MetLife Retirement Services. It's a free training program that they offer to anybody who wants to take it. And that leads into contact information to follow up, which may eventually lead to a sale, but it's a course that they designed once. They taught a whole bunch of trainers to offer it all over the country, and it's something that people can make use of and refer other people to without a sales pitch involved. So that's the same type of idea, just in a different, more business type of format.
Okay, so let me get this in here. So another question, will you have a separate website for the new book? And if so, how will you coordinate newsletters, mailing lists between the two sites? And then I would add, if you're not planning on doing another website, how are you planning on integrating a book that's not necessarily personal MBA into a site that already exists?
Yeah, so there are a couple things. I am planning a separate segmented email newsletter and a separate site. That site, interestingly enough, right now will not have a blog. So the nice thing about blogs is they're a good way to engage people over a long period of time. They also take energy going on a regular basis. What I'm replacing it with on the new site are some very high quality, very free to use resources that directly pertain to the stuff in the book. So whereas Personal MBA has really one major, the reading list, and one minor, the Personal MBA Manifesto, which is kind of an explanation of how the whole thing works. Where the Personal MBA has two really big evergreen resources, the new book website will have many more, and those will be targeted. What I'm planning to do in terms of the first promotion is the new book is not directly related to business. It is related to what my Personal MBA readers are interested in, which is learning useful new skills. So it's what you could probably call an adjacency. It's not the exact same idea, but it's very closely related in a way that my readers are really going to be excited about. So promoting the new book on Personal MBA is actually not that big a deal, because I know from my research my readers are going to love it.
Okay, another question. Josh, why bother with a trade publisher if the bulk of your ongoing sales are being generated off your website and newsletter? Why not self-fulfill through a printer and keep the enhanced margin?
You know, it's funny. I actually considered that. And that was actually my default going in option before deciding to go the trade publisher route. And I would say two things. Number one, there is some particularly marketing value in the distribution that a trade book provides. So, for example, working with Portfolio allowed the book to be published in the UK as well as the US on publication. The UK publisher in particular did a really bang-up job and ended up selling 40,000 plus copies at the largest book chain in the UK. That is something that I could not have done on my own. And now there are 40,000 readers who are not visitors of my website who now have been exposed to my work, know what I do, and have found value from it. So partly the distribution is a form of marketing. And that marketing, if you have a system to convert visitors into subscribers, into long, higher lifetime value purchasers, that's a really good thing. The second is it's becoming easier and easier and easier to self-publish, and that it's becoming actually a very attractive option as the months and the years go by. I would say that the deal that Penguin Portfolio offered was high enough that some of the detriments of trade publishing, in terms of it taking a long time and giving up a certain amount of control over the finished project, the deal was good enough that it made me comfortable to go in that route. And by deal,
are you talking about the advance or something more than just the money you got to write the book?
Pretty much the whole package. So the advance, the team that I was going to be working with, there were a lot of things about working with Portfolio, particularly for personal MBA, that are and remain super attractive. So, and I'm publishing book number two through Portfolio. And it was the same situation. If I wanted to self-publish, I could very easily, and the book would do well. There are benefits in terms of the team and the distribution and the size of the deal that made it attractive to go to the trade publish route. That said, you know, every book is a new journey. So it's something whenever I commit to a new project, it's a calculus of what is the best way to bring this book to the largest audience that will find it useful. And right now, at this point in time, it's publishing through Portfolio.
Now, I know that you publish nonfiction, but you know, have you thought any about this same decision when it comes to fiction writers? Because there's something that, you know, you talked about the distribution, which is different when it comes to nonfiction. Mm-hmm. But also, you make money in lots of other ways than just the book. You know, we've already talked about your live courses, your online courses, those things as well. So, what's the decision process for fiction writers? If you were writing a fiction book, what would the decision process be for you?
If I was writing a fiction book, or if I started tomorrow, my default option would be self-publishing. Mostly because, and aside from the distribution side of things, the distribution that you get in fiction is a little bit different than it is in nonfiction, particularly because there's so many titles, and the competition is super, super fierce, such that you can be trade published, and if it doesn't sell well in a couple months, you're dropped. Whereas that's a little bit less intense on the nonfiction side. The really big sticking point in terms of trade fiction is the advance levels for trade publishing a novel are almost insultingly low at this point. There are so many stories, there are so many people who want to publish that it's driven, you know, unless you are already a well-known author with a proven track record of moving tens or hundreds of thousands or millions of books, your advance is going to be really, really, really low. Industry average, last time I heard, was about $5,000, if you're lucky. At that level, you are far better off self-publishing through something like Lightning Source or Amazon Kindle Direct, or you know, one of in as many formats as you can. You get control over the entire project. You don't have to spend a year chasing a publisher. You get to keep approximately 70% of everything you earn, and the promotion is going to be on you anyway. So you know, for fiction, if I was starting a project tomorrow, it would be self-publishing, and it would have to be a really extraordinary deal for me to go the trade route for fiction. That's just me.
Okay, well, our time is up. I'm sorry that we weren't able to get to all the questions, but if you did register for this and listen to it, I'm going to make it available for you to listen to or watch later. I'll make sure all the resources are online as well. I'll send out links to that. Make sure that you visit Josh's website, personalmba.com. Make sure that you sign up for his newsletter. And even if you're not interested in the business side of things, sign up just so you can get kind of a behind-the-scenes look at the kind of emails he sends and learn a little bit from somebody that's doing this really well. Also, for me, visit outthinkgroup.com and sign up for my newsletter as well. And I'll send you lots of resources and make sure you know about upcoming episodes of this webinar. We have one planned for next month that I'm really excited about, and we already got them planned out for June and July as well. So thanks so much, Josh, for joining me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And thanks all of you that tuned in and are listening to this later down the road. Again, I'm Tim Grawl with Outthink Group, and thank you.